Okay, Parshas Balosha, Tavshin Samach Zayin. We have two topics to discuss today. Topic number one is the two psukim that are isolated from the rest of the Parsha and designated as separate by the inverted nuns that surround them. Those are the two psukim, Vayhi ben Soa Ha'aron and Benocho. Okay, you will find them right before Perek Yud Aleph on page 786. They are the end of Perek Yud. We will talk about those two psukim because we sing them in shul and we are very familiar with them and we want to understand them a little more. And also, in order to really understand the impact of these two psukim, we are going to speak about the issue that immediately follows these two psukim, and that is the issue of the complaint of the Jewish people, specifically in regard to the mon, and how the Torah defends the mon, and how, in the most uncharacteristic way, Moshe, instead of arguing on behalf of the Jewish people and arguing for mercy and being done the kav sechut and telling Hashem that he has to save them and forgive them, because what will the Goyim say, and all of the other arguments and the promises he made to the ancestors, Moshe takes a completely different approach and says, fine, that's it, I can't deal with this, kill me right now, why are you putting this burden on me, it's too much for me. We've never seen Moshe act like this. We have seen back in the end of Shemos, in the beginning of the era, where Moshe said to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, look, since I came to Paro, you haven't done what you said you're going to do, so why have you been so harsh with this nation? But that was Moshe arguing on behalf of the Jewish people. And here he doesn't argue on their behalf. He's angry at them. He says, what should I do with them? I can't handle them. And we have seen that Moshe says, this job is too much for me, by the snare, pick someone who's more qualified, who's more capable. I feel like I'm not up to it. But we haven't seen Moshe say, as he says here, I'd rather die than continue on here. If this is how angry how bad you see me as, then just kill me right now. What is at the core of what Moshe's upset about? When we understand that, we'll go back and understand in greater depth the importance of the two psukim, Vayhi ben Soa Ha'aron. First of all, we have spoken about some of these ideas in the past years, but there are other layers that will now be introduced today. First of all, the layout of the Parsha itself. Okay, the Parsha, it doesn't seem to have much of a flow at all. It seems like a hodgepodge of different topics. If we begin at the beginning of Balosha, we see that there are some laws about the menorah. And we won't go into each of them, but there are laws regarding the menorah and its lighting, obviously relating to the Mishkan. There are laws about the Levium and the dedication of the Levium to their service, assigning them their roles and starting them off in their service. We have that's most of chapter 8 of Perek Ches. Then we have to discuss the Pesach. The Parsha discusses Pesach of the second year. And within the context of Pesach of the second year, we begin to deal for the first time with the issue of Pesach Sheni. It's not only Pesach Sheni here, it's Pesach in the second year. And the people that were Tamei at the time, so we have the issues of Pesach Sheni. And then there is the story of starting on Pasuk 15, page 781, we start talking about how the traveling of the Jewish people would work, how they would be following the cloud and the fire at night, and when the cloud would lift, they would travel and journey, and then when the cloud would rest, the children of Israel would camp. And, by the way, you might think that this would have been the appropriate place right here to put in the Pesukim, Vayhi ben Soa Ha'aron. When the Aaron would travel, he would say, Hashem, please defeat all your enemies that lay before you. And when the Aaron would stop, when the people would stop, when the cloud would stop, then he would say, Hashem, let your Shechina dwell amongst us. And so here we talk about how they would travel. And then in Pasuk 10, Perek 10, we have the discussion of the silver trumpets, which would they would blow in order to signify that they were traveling, and in the other times that they would blow them. And then, of course, they talk about the direction that they would travel, the way that the camps around the Aron would leave, who was first, who was second, how the whole thing would move in formation. Lastly, Moshe says to Yisro, please stay with us. Yisro says no. And that's where we find, really, the Vehi ben Soah Aron. Following Vehi ben Soah Aron, we have an entirely different set of stories. Before Vehi ben Soah Aron, we're obviously dealing with all kinds of information and stories that tell us, if you really want to create a link, the last pertinent bits of information we need to know about how Klal Yisrael finally got ready to move forward into Eretz Yisrael. The Leviim were assigned their roles, they were told when to travel, when the Mishkan would travel, how the Mishkan would travel, how they would announce the travel, who would travel first, who would travel second. The Leviim were very important because they would carry all of the belongings, the parts of the Mishkan. In other words, everything up till Vayhi ben Soah is the wrapping up operations. It's the last pertinent information necessary for arranging all things so that now we can begin our journey directly into Eretz Yisrael. That's clearly what's happening here. He says, come with us, he tells Yisro, we're going to that place. If you look at the Pasuk Chaf Tes on page 784, look what Moshe says to him. Nosim anachnu el hamakom asher amar Hashem oto etein lachem. We are traveling right now to the place that Hashem said, I will give it to you. L'cha itanu. Come, stay, come with us. This is Pasuk Chaf Tes. And Mefarshim say here that Moshe said to him, we are now traveling miyad, right away. We are going now. This is the end. These are the wrapping up operations. Everything's in place. We know how to travel, how to announce the travel, who travels, how to travel in order. Let's go. We're going now. Yisro says no, and then you have Vayhi ben Soah. Following this whole group of stories or information that tell us that we're about to go, we're literally 3 days away from Eretz Yisrael. This is it. Remember that and think about the implications of this. Those people that left Mitzrayim and stood at Har Sinai were meant to be the same people that entered Eretz Yisrael. Now imagine all three experiences in one generation. We left Mitzrayim, we stood at Har Sinai, and we came into Eretz Yisrael. Chazal say, had that same generation accomplished all three milestones, then their settlement in Eretz Yisrael would have been forever. The Mishkan, the Mikdash they set up there would have been forever. There was never meant to be a disconnection between those that stood at Har Sinai and left Mitzrayim and those who went into Eretz Yisrael. It was supposed to be a continuous whole, one experience, one cumulative experience. It was not supposed to be dissected in half and others would enter Eretz Yisrael who had not even necessarily left Mitzrayim or even stood at Har Sinai. That was a huge problem ultimately for our history. And perhaps explains why the Meraglim and the attempt to settle Eretz Yisrael, why it was, it had some difficulties along the way. Now, following Vayhi ben Soah Aron, we get into a whole list of huge problems, as if everything just deteriorates, everything just unravels right in front of our eyes. They're about to go in, and here there's misonanim. People who complain, we don't even know what they were complaining about. Rashi says, if you look in the Rashi, they were looking for something to complain about. They were unhappy. They were maladjusted. They had an issue, and they don't even know what the issue is, and the Torah doesn't even tell us. They wanted to complain, oh, it was such a difficult journey. Hashem is pushing us so hard. Why do we have to get there so fast? They just resisted. Following, and of course, a fire burned and consumed them. There was some type of tragedy. And here Moshe calls out, and he prays, and the fire subsides, and he calls this place Tav'era. We're on page 788, Pasuk Gimel. And then, as soon as this tragedy subsides, and we feel like, okay, we should now go forward, there were some bad apples, but let's move on, immediately we have another huge issue, and this was much more, had many more implications. There was an asafsuf, the lowest level of the nation, the Erevrav, and they wanted to have some type of desire, and they began complaining about the man, which we will get into. And this is where Moshe had his entire reaction, and Hashem said, fine, give me 70 people, and you won't be the only Navi, and they'll share the Nevuah with you, and that is the whole story of Eldad and Medad, and we will speak about that again later. And following on this, and then of course Hashem sent them meat, and they gorged themselves, and they died, etc. And right on the tails of this, Moshe is the victim of this Lashon Hara. You know, he's the object of the Lashon Hara that Miriam is speaking against Aaron, right? And now everybody has to stay and wait 7 days till her tzaras is healed. And following directly on this is the Meraglim, right? And their sin, which they learned from Miriam. If she could speak Lashon Hara about a Davar Shebe Kedusha, that's Moshe. So they can speak Lashon Hara about a Davar Shebe Kedusha, that's Eretz Yisrael. And following on the Meraglim is Korach. And before you turn around, we're stuck in the desert for 40 years, etc. Okay? So the question is, it wasn't really the sin of the Meraglim that got us stuck in the desert entirely. It was everything from Vayhi Ben Tzoa Aaron and onwards. That's really what stopped us. The Meraglim learned from Miriam. Miriam, we'll see, had felt that she could make this comment because of what happened before that, which is the spreading of Nevuah to 70 other people. And that happened because Moshe said, I cannot bear this nation. And that happened because they complained about the man. So we basically, our march forward, our triumphal march forward, immediately in Eretz Yisrael, came to an end, and the whole beautiful picture unraveled, not just because of the Meraglim. It was all a very long process. So let's discuss Vayhi Ben Tzoa, and then we'll talk about the man. So Vayhi Ben Tzoa Ha'aron, Chazal say that this little section, surrounded by nuns, is a very important section. It has 85 letters. Now, we have a rule about 85 letters. The halacha is that if you find a Sefer Torah that is in such a state of disrepair that you feel that it cannot even be repaired, you don't even have to repair it, you know, the halacha is that if it has 85 letters intact, it still has the status of a Sefer Torah. 85 letters.
Words.
Huh? 85 letters. And we'll talk about the words in a minute. And there are 85 letters here. By the way, how many words are here? This becomes very important. No, there's not 19 words here. Oh, 18, yeah. There are 19, you're right. There are 19, you're right. You're right, okay. Now Chazal say that if you will get to that later, by the way, in a moment. By the way, count how many words are in the first pasuk Vayhi Ben Tzoa, and count how many words are in the second pasuk. Mm-hmm. Okay, this becomes important too. Chazal say here that this, taking the rule from the fact that 85 letters can be a sefer, can be considered a sefer, that these two psukim with the nuns are sefer chashuv bifnei atzmo. This is its own sefer Torah. In fact, to go on further, we are saying that there are three sefarim in sefer Bamidbar. Actually, there's seven, could have been seven books of the Torah. Bereshis Shemos Vayikra Bamidbar till Vayhi Ben Tzoa. Bamidbar till Vayhi Ben Tzoa is the fourth sefer. Vayhi Ben Tzoa is the fifth sefer, these two psukim. Okay. After, from the end of Vayhi Ben Tzoa till the end of Bamidbar is the sixth sefer. And Devarim is the seventh sefer. These two psukim are a sefer bifnei atzmo. And Rashi tells you, the nuns are there to tell you, it's not in its place. Ein zu mekomo. This is not its rightful place. Now, we could say that seems obvious, it's not its rightful place, because as we said before, it should have been back a few psukim earlier, perhaps, where maybe in the beginning of Bamidbar, where it talked about the Degolim, or maybe a few psukim earlier, where it said when the cloud moved, they traveled. But that's not, but you can make an argument, can't you, that this is its rightful place. They were just about to move into Eretz Yisrael. Moshe says to Yisro, come with us, we're going now, and then Vayibin so Aron. So it does not obviously seem out of place. And yet Rashi says, Ein zu makomo. This sefer is placed here. And it's a sefer bifnei atzmo, but it's not in its right place. Our objective is to understand that. What should have been, this is a sefer. It's only two psukim long. The first pasuk is 12 words. The last pasuk in our Sefer Torah is 12 words long. Let's look at the last pasuk in the Sefer Torah, the end of Devarim. On page 1124. Ulech kol hayad hachazaka, ulekol hamora hagadol asher asamosha le'enei kol Yisrael. The last words of our Sefer Torah has 12 words, and it says, this is the story of everything, of the great strong hand and awesome power that Moshe performed before the eyes of all of Israel. That is the end of the Torah. This is the story of the greatness. That is a 12-word pasuk, equivalent to Vayhi ben Soah Aaron. The second pasuk, ubenocho yomar, has 7 words. So where is the important 7-word pasuk? Of course, the first pasuk in the Torah. So what we see here, in a way, there's a hint here that this is also an entire Torah. Now we have to ask the obvious question. Backwards, very important. Backwards. Vayibin So, which is the beginning of the setting out of the Jewish people, the start of their journey, is associated with the last words of the Torah. And final, the final end, when their enemies have been defeated and they've settled in their land, the end of the story is associated with the first words in the Torah. Very important. But in any case, it's telling you that these two psukim are like the bookends of the whole Torah. But where's the rest of the information? The rest of the story was never written yet. It was meant to be a story of the moving into Eretz Yisrael, the defeat of the nations quickly, systematically, without any casualties, the settling of the Jews in Eretz Yisrael, and Mashiach, basically, the days of Mashiach and the blissful utopian future. That was meant to be the body of the Sefer contained between these two psukim. But that never happened. Why did that never happen? Because of everything after Vayhi ben Soah. Because just when they were about to travel, all kinds of chaos ensued. So, this book remains unwritten with its first pasuk and its last pasuk. In the end, this first pasuk, when Hashem would travel, the Aaron would travel, lead Klal Yisrael to their destiny, that pasuk still stands there. The entire history of the Jewish people, as it has unfolded in the last 3,500 years since this time, has not been written yet. We've experienced it, but no Navi has written it yet. It will be written. It will be written as the history we know. And the last pasuk of the Sefer will be, for sure, as anything is sure as the sun comes up, the last pasuk will be Ubenocho, when everything settles down and the peace is restored and we're back in Eretz Yisrael and the Shechina dwells among us. We will live there. We will be in that situation. That will be the last pasuk. But in between, the entire Sefer has yet to be written. Had everything proceeded, the way it should have, with the Aron in front of them, then the Aron would have led this journey and would have been the main object of this story. But the Aron was not able to lead this journey. And in the end, the Aron itself was lost to us. So what replaced the Aron? What is guiding us through the journey that will lead eventually to the last pasuk, to our ultimate settlement in Eretz Yisrael? Not the Aron, Chazal tell us, but the following. Ilmale mora'o shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he'ach uma achat yecholah lehitkayem ben ha'umot. If not for the mora, the fear of God, how could one nation have survived through all of this history? In other words, we do not have the Aron leading us, but our survival, our ultimate march to our destiny, is being led by Mora. As we say, the word in Shemoneh Esrei, Hakel, Hagadol, Hagibar, Hanora. Nora has replaced the Aron. Now, what is Nora as related to Aron? Not just the same letters.
Backwards.
Also, like the two psukim, it's backwards. Nora is Aron the other way. So, what do we mean when we talk about Nora? We talk about the idea that for a while, after this destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash by Yirmiyahu, he refused to say the word Nora. He said, Hakel, Hagadol, Hagibor, stop. He refused to use the word Nora in his prayer. And Daniel, we know, went a little further. And Daniel omitted Gibor. And their reason was, how could Hashem be considered Gibor and Nora, awesome and powerful, when the heathens, our greatest enemies, are desecrating the Beis HaMikdash and he's doing nothing? So Anshei Knesset HaGdola came in the beginning of the second Beis HaMikdash. And that's how they got their name, Anshei Knesset HaGdola. Their greatness was, they restored these words. Now, it's not just a simple technical, you know, adjustment to the text. They taught the Jewish people, of course there's Gibor, of course Hashem is Nora. And it's coming to us in a different way. No, not like the Aron, open miracles, total victory, power, control, you know, God on our side. Yes, that's the way we would have liked it, the Aron. But make no mistake about it, we are being led through history because Hashem is Gibor and Nora, awesome and powerful. But it's evident in a different way. It's evident in letting history play itself out, restraining himself, not interfering in history as much in open ways, letting the Jewish people and the world at large learn from experience, from trial and error, the truth that they could have learned from the Aron had they not unraveled all of it. And that truth is, in the end, Ein Od Milvado. There's nothing but the will of Hashem. Either you learn it from the Aron, from Hashem's open presence among us, or you learn it from the survival of the Jewish people through history, our slow march, but eventually arriving at our destination. That's Nora. And that's where Chazal say, the pasuk we just quoted, what do you mean Nora? There's no Nora. If there was no Nora, how would one nation survive? Think about our history. So yes, this book hasn't been written now. And when it gets written, it's not going to be the book that could have been written. It will be the book not of the Aron leading the way, but of Nora leading the way. Now, what about the backwards pattern? Vayhi ben Soa is the last pasuk, and Benocho is the first pasuk. Aron is Nora. Let's explain now something else, very quizzical, something interesting, about, it's not quite the same area as gematrias, but it's in that genre. Okay, sometimes you hear about messages encoded in words through the Atbash system. Have you heard about Atbash? At means instead of an aleph, it's a tav. There's a shin. Okay, so for example, Nefesh, we spoke about this, remember? Nefesh in Atbash is Tov. Okay? So the Nun is the test. Both are nine letters in from the end. Okay, Atbash, where you just take the equivalent space, the equivalent place in the alphabet, and you find that place going backwards. What is the idea behind Atbash? It's not a funny little game we're playing. Moshe Shapiro explains the following. Think about it this. Look, here you're sitting in a class. I know what I'm going to say. I know, in the end, what you will understand when the class is over. But I'm building towards it slowly. And you don't have the picture in your head. You have piece by second piece by third piece. So it's step by step by step. But in the end, when it all comes together, then looking backwards, you have the whole thing and you understand how it was built step by step. Going backwards, from backwards to forwards, to the beginning, from the end rather, to the beginning, implies understanding. From the beginning to the end implies process. Right? You see this? Mm-hmm. When you go from aleph to tuf, you're working on a process. When you go basht, the other way, that's havana. You talk about nefesh, till you realize what nefesh is, you finally realize we're talking about tov. Right? We spoke about this. So we are dealing with a similar idea here. Aron becomes Nora. In the end, in the retrospective on Jewish history, we see that the awesomeness of Hashem that kept us alive through endless, endless attempts at our annihilation, the strange miracle of Jewish survival, is really the presence of Hashem among us, though we saw it in a different way. When you see Vayehi ben Soa, the travels, the process, the whole story of Jewish history that had to unfold from this moment on, that went off track, and led us to where we are today. This whole entire process, in the end, that becomes the last pasuk in the Torah. It all makes sense when we look back how we got here. And Benocho, Hashem, you're settling. That becomes the first pasuk. Because we know that in the end we will be settled, and in the end we will reach our destiny, but we're not quite sure how we're getting there. But in the end, when we get there, we'll understand how the whole process worked. It all becomes clear in retrospect. So we're saying here that there's two alternatives. There's the alternative of Aron. What is that alternative? We'll see in a moment through the Mon. Without the Aron, you come to Nora. But why? Why did it have to go so off track? Why did the Jewish people begin to fight, to resist, to complain? What was so bad about the perfect situation that they were in? And here we have to begin to look at the story of the Mon. By the way, let me just say here, when the Torah says, when Chazal say, Ein ze mekomo, it's not its place, because really it is its place. It should have been its place. But it's not its place anymore. It's now, it hasn't been written yet. Its place will be in the end. In the end, the Sefer will be written. And by the way, people that we know, our relatives, our ancestors, their names, they will be the names in the Torah that will be written, in the Sefer that will be written. The great acts of Mesiras Nefesh by people we closely know, those names will be included eventually in the Sefer that's going to be written. I don't know how long this Sefer will be. It has to encompass a long, long time. But the stories we went through, our history will be in that Sefer, and it will be written by a Navi. And the question is really now, who will be included? Whose names will appear? Whose stories will appear? Whose acts of Mesiras Nefesh will appear? And whose will not? This is really up to us. But the Sefer will be written. And just also to mention the Nuns, the two inverted Nuns. Why this letter of all the letters? So in Ashrei, we specifically omit the Nuns. Why is this? Because Nun represents no fail. For example, in Amos, Perek Hei Pasuk Aleph, Nafla Lotosif, Kum Betulat Yisrael. You know this Pasuk? So it could be written two ways. Nafla, she fell. Lotosif Kum, she will no longer get up, the maiden of Israel. But Chazal say, don't read it like this. Read it, Nafla Lotosif. She will no longer fall. Kum, get up, the maiden of Israel. We delete the Nun because it implies the failure that took over here, that forced us to get off track. But in Ashrei, what do we put right after instead of the Nun? What's the Samach all about? Somech Hashem l'chol hanoflim. Hashem supports those that fall. So here there are Nuns. Nun represents failure, falling. But the Nuns are inverted. Hashem will write the those that fall. And the Samach is very important because we will get back to the implications of the roundness of the letter Samach. But it means that there is a failure, but it will be righted. In the end, this journey will take place and we will arrive at our destination. So the question is, how did it go off track? So we have to talk about the Mon. Now, we have spoken about this before, but again, as we said, there are some other ideas that we are now introducing. What was their chief complaint about the Mon? Let's begin to look in Pasuk Hey. They complained. They complained. We they said, they started to cry, and they said, who will give us meat? And then they mentioned specific foods that they missed, such as what? Fish, and cucumbers, melons, leeks, onions, and garlic. So what is this? Why is it insignificant for the Torah to mention the little petty nonsense of their complaints? So it's not so petty here. We are going to see a pattern building. Rashi says, what is unique about these food? They're no good for a mother who's nursing. Okay. Point number one. Keep going. Okay. Then they say, Va'ata, and now our nefesh is dried out. We're dried out. We have no enthusiasm to live. We have no oomph. We have no initiative. We have only the man. And what's the last word in the pasuk? Bilti el haman einenu. How do you read that? Nothing but the man, our eyes. What is the connection between man and our eyes? Are they trying to say nothing but the man before our eyes each day? All we see is man. Is that what they're trying to say? This is a strange form of grammar. Bilti et haman, nothing but the man, einenu, our eyes. And then the Torah goes into a defense of the man, and it calls it kezora gadhu. And then it says ve'eino, and its eyes and its appearance. It should have said its mar'e, its appearance, but its eyes. There's something about eyes here. Ke'ein habedolach. A bedolach is a crystal. It has some ability for visual to be. It can see. It has some ability for sight. It can visualize. It's like a crystal. It's all very vague here. It looks like a crystal, and it's like the eye that sees a crystal. It's like the crystal that shows the eye something with bright, with perfect sight, and the concept of a beautiful crystal, right? Something's at work here. We'll figure it out. And then the Torah goes on to say you could do anything you want with it, and it fell on top of the man, on top of the tal. Moshe hears everybody crying, and he gets very angry. This is not a normal response. And he says to Hashem, why have you been so bad to me? How come I haven't found favor in your eyes to give me this burden? And look at his next pasuk. Did I conceive them? Did I carry them? Did I give birth to them? You tell me, carry them in your breast, in your bosom, like a nursing mother carries her suckling child. Where can I get meat? What kind of strange question is that? Where can I get meat? I mean, hello, Moshe, Hashem, give them meat. This is not his responsibility. They're begging me, Yivchu Alai, they're begging on me, give us basar, and I can't give them basar. I cannot deal with them. Please kill me if I found favor in your eyes. So Hashem says, okay, it's too much for you. I'm going to find 70 people to help you. But look in Pasuk Tesavav. Im kacha at oseli. What's at?
It's feminine.
Okay. And I missed one thing. Go back to Pasuk Ches. When the Pasuk describes it, it calls it Lashad Hashemen. What is Lashad Hashemen? Well, Shidayim are breasts again. Okay, we're having a lot of imagery here of the food, it doesn't taste like certain things that are no good for nursing mothers. Moshe says, what, did I give birth to them, that you want me to nurse them? And then he says, it looks like a crystal, if it's good for the eyes, it has some special ability for sight. And then its taste is like breast milk, lashad hashemen, like the oil of the breast. And then he calls me, gives him 70 other Nevi'im. And remember what happens to skip a little bit ahead? All the Nevi'im stopped prophesizing, except two. What were their names in Pasuk Chavav? Eldad, Omeidad. Adad, again, we said, is a breast. Dudayim, right? What is Eldad and Meidad? So we have something going on here. The imagery being presented is something about nursing. So this is how we understand it. We've spoken about this here. We won't go into it in full detail. we've spoken about the idea that when Klal Yisrael awoke from their deep sleep, when humanity was in the first 2,500 years of existence, that is compared to the deep sleep. Remember the Tardema of Bereshis. And we spoke about Har Sinai as the awakening from the deep sleep. And we spoke about the idea, remember this, and we remember the idea that when man was created, it was one being, Isha and Isha together. It was awake, it was alert, and it was both male and female, and it was perfect. And then Hashem put it into a sleep and separated it into the two parts, Zachar and Nekeva, male and female. And then when Hashem took the female and brought the female back to the male and said, be one again, be basar echad, be one flesh, and when they reunite and they're actually one flesh, then they are how they were before the sleep, before the separation. So we spoke about this as a grand mashal for all of history, that the Zachar and the Nekeva as one. You don't remember any of this? Good. Okay, so just quickly. They were one, right? The separation of Ruchnius and Gashmius. The Gashmius, the material, that's the Makabel, the receiver. The receiver must join, come back to the giver, and that is the aspect of Kabbalah Satorah. And all of the time, until Klal Yisrael, the ultimate receiver, the people who agreed to be the receiver, did this journey, came back, found themselves at Har Sinai through their own will, their own volunteerism, to be Mekablim. Those years were all chaos, tohu vavohu, years of nothing being accomplished spiritually in the world till the Jewish people. And the returning, the awakening is Har Sinai. So if you compare Har Sinai to the reunion between Klal Yisrael and Hashem, symbolized by a chuppah, symbolized by the union of man and woman, and you see that in that moment of Har Sinai, there is absolute clarity, which we have called Das. Remember we talked about Das? Ata horesa la Das. You have been shown it, so you have Das. Das is not like Chachma and Bina and Sechel. It's not a form of knowledge, a form of learning. It's not a way the brain works, different types of information or different types of styles of learning. Das is the end point. It's the awareness. It's the absolute awareness that the Ruchnius and the Gashmius are linked, as we say, before Ein Od Milvado, there's nothing but Hashem and Hashem's will. And we, as soon as we realize that we are an extension of that and we are meant to act like that through all our thought and speech and actions, then we know that there is very little separation between the Ruchnius and the Gashmius. We are an expression of the Ruchnius here. When we understand that, that's called having a state of Das, of awareness. It's in the end point. It's when you arrive at, when you know you're one. The moment of Har Sinai was a moment of Das. By the way, the Mashal and man and woman, when they come back together, Adam, Yada, Eschava, that's man and woman also returning as one, that's the Mashal, is also called Das, knowledge, the absolute oneness of connection. That was the moment of Har Sinai where the world, the Ruchnius, pervaded the world to such a degree, everybody knew that there was no separation between the Ruchnius and the Gashmius. Everything here was meant to be just the expression of the Ruchnius. That represents, okay, that moment represents really the birth of Klal Yisrael. The birth of Klal Yisrael is synonymous with this reunion with Hashem. The mashal for the birth of Klal Yisrael, the infancy of Klal Yisrael, the mashal that we're using is the mashal of the baby being born. And the first thing that happens when the baby is born, and remember this mashal we've spoken about a lot, the fetus and the mother going through the birth process, the kever, which is the grave, and the uterus, the same word, and coming out of the birth process, right, being born, which is the birth of Klal Yisrael right then. And we talked about this in terms of Olam Haba, being born into the next world. When a baby is born, what is the first thing a baby does?
Cries.
And then what is the first thing that the baby naturally starts to do without it being taught? It starts to suck. It starts to nurse. What happens with nursing is that the baby is basically deriving now its existence, its sustenance, from its shoresh, from its source that created it. When the baby is nursing from the mother, there is no longer a pirud, a separation between the baby and the mother. Now, the truth is there is more of a separation at nursing than there was when the baby was inside. When the baby was inside, then there was no separation between the mother and the baby, right? But there's one problem. When the baby is inside the mother, and we've also mentioned this, the baby is inside the mother, right? But if you ask the baby, the fetus, what is the mystery that you can never solve, the unanswerable question that plagues you every moment of existence, the fetus would say, I am existing within my creator. I hear the heartbeat, I hear the muffled words, I'm being kept warm, I'm being carried from place to place, I'm being fed nutrients. But who is my creator? Who is my mother? I'm the closest creation in existence to my mother, but I'm the only one who has no idea, cannot know who my mother is. Only going through the process of birth then brings the baby face to face with the mother. This is what we experience in the move to Olam Haba, which is not for today's talk, but also in the awakening of Har Sinai. It's also considered like a birth. That's another type of mashal, the birth of Klal Yisrael, where we come face to face with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who was all around us in Mitzrayim, on the Yam, it's on the, with the, in the desert. Now we come face to face at Har Sinai with the Creator. A moment of Nevuah, of Giloy Shechina for everybody. The first thing the baby does is it then begins to suck, to then derive its sustenance, its nourishment from the mother itself, from the Shoresh, from its source. The first thing Klal Yisrael are fed is man. Man is a mushal, really. Breast milk, really, is the mushal for man. Just like breast milk provides the baby with all that it needs. It needs nothing but the breast milk, and it changes every day according to the needs of the baby, correct? As the man tasted like every different thing, so too the breast milk is never the same one, feeding to the next, okay? They are being fed everything they need to survive, but eating the man, brings Klal Yisrael into a situation where there is no separation between them and Hashem. Like there is no separation between that baby and the mother. The baby needs the mother, and the mother is devoted entirely to the baby. They need each other, actually. The mother must nurse, and it's painful for the mother not to nurse, and the baby must suck. There is the connection. They are so closely bound. That is what the man provided for them. And for Klal Yisrael, this became too much. They started complaining. It doesn't taste like these things. Rashi says, of course not. Those things wouldn't be good for a nursing mother. This man is breast milk. Klal Yisrael say, but it's all we get all the time. We want something else. We want meat. Now, when a baby stops nursing, pulls away, and starts wanting solid food, we know, and we consider it a healthy part of the process of growing up, independence, a little separation from the mother. Sometimes, then eventually they won't even let you feed them. They have to feed themselves, right? And they won't even let you wipe them. They want independence. It's natural for a baby, for an infant, to begin to feel it wants separation. Because living as part of the mother is not easy, and certainly not easy for the Jewish people in their young stage. They're beginning to feel the same thing. They want some separation. Imagine living in a state where there is where there is no distance between Hashem and is sustaining the people, and they're eating the sustenance of a completely ruchnius style of life, where they don't feel their own nefesh at work, and that's what they say. Our soul is dry. Where's our human initiative? This is a connection that's too close. They weren't ready for it. Now, the Torah, now that is why Moshe says, what, should I carry them like I'm nursing them? What do you want from me? You want me to nurse them? And then Moshe starts saying, where am I going to get basar? Where am I going to give them basar? I have no basar. Just kill me. What is this all about? So Chazal tell us that there were three gifts the Klal Yisrael had in the desert. The well, who's that in that zechus of? Miriam. The clouds in the zechus of? And the man in the zechus of? Moshe lived like this on a normal basis. That's why what Moshe could provide for the people was what Moshe was, the man. Moshe lived like this. 40 days on the mountain. He could live on this level. But when the people couldn't live on this level, what was Moshe's role? He couldn't provide anything but man for them, because man was an expression of his madriga. He was no longer suited for the people. His unique connection between that Ruchnius and Gashmius and Moshe were so intertwined. He had no self, really, other than the will of Hashem. So he produced the man for them. And therefore Moshe said, I have no more role here. This is the end. I was about to leave them in Eretz Yisrael, but seeing this, I'm not their leader. I'm not their leader anymore. I can't be their leader. In Shir HaShirim, flip quickly to page 1264, Perek Dalid, Pasuk Hey, 1265. You know Shir HaShirim is in this imagery of a woman and a man. Says about Klal Yisrael, Shanei Shadayich Kishnei Afarim. Tells us that your two breasts, and Chazal say, and it's putting the Parish right into the English translation. Shnei Shadach, your two breasts, that's Chazal says, Moshe and Aaron, who fed you. That's Moshe and Aaron. Those are the breasts that fed Klal Yisrael. In the Aron, does anybody remember how the Badim had to look? You know, in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, the poles on the side of the Aron. And when you looked at the Kodesh HaKadoshim, you saw the paroches. And how did the badim have to be positioned? They had to be poking out like two breasts. Because the aron with the luchos represented for Klal Yisrael their breast milk. Right? This is what they were fed, the aron. Now Klal Yisrael couldn't live on this level. They weren't ready for it. That's the level of the aron. That's the level of Moshe and Aaron. It's the level of the mun. But the Torah says what they're giving up here. They'll get meat, but let me tell you what they're giving up. The man is like a crystal. It helps them see. And they don't want to see, maybe. In other words, in this type of relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's inevitable. A person who lives this close has proper clarity of vision. They have sight. They have das. They see everything from Hashem's perspective, looking down. They see the big picture from on top. Moshe Rabbeinu understood. You don't, in this type of close connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you don't have questions. It gives them clarity. But if they refuse to eat the man, they are sacrificing their ability to see the truth clearly. And now you wonder why Miriam didn't understand Moshe and the Meraglim didn't understand the beauty of Eretz Yisrael. Because they gave up their ability to see clearly because they refused to eat the man. The man gave them vision, gave them clarity, but on the other hand, the man was too much for this nation. And we go through the very same experience. We should go through the very same experience. When a person learns Torah, and the person recognizes that there's emes, and a person sees in simple situation that a mitzvah is emes, it's in the Torah, it's the will of Hashem. And that, in a sense, compels a person to follow. And a person yet doesn't want to submit, doesn't want to follow, wants to maintain a certain independence. How many people say, I'd rather not know? Because knowledge demands reaction. And they didn't want to eat the man, which brought them physically, like an infant nursing, in such close proximity to Hashem. Don't forget how the man worked. It only fell at night till you only got as much as you could gather a huge pile. In the end, it'll all melt down to just what you need. Just what you need, and it'll rot overnight. You never go to bed at night having anything in storage for the next day. The next day you wake up depending on a nes. Every single day, Rav Hirsch explains that this Midbar was the school teaching them emuna, absolute emuna in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Right? That you wake up in the morning, will there be a nes or not? Depending on a nes all the time. We couldn't live like that. Nothing in the refrigerator. Nothing in the pantry, nothing in the freezer. Emunah in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But this is what Hashem wanted for them. Now listen, Moshe says, you want me to carry them? Kasher Yisa HaOmen, the nursing mother, carries the suckling child. The relationship of the mother to the baby is an Omen. She is an Omen. Omen is the Shoresh of the word Emunah. When we have the feeling of emuna, do you know what that feeling is? The same feeling the infant baby has nursing from the mother. No needs, no worries, perfect content, security, that everything is in order, everything will be taken care of, nothing to worry about, protected. That experience that the baby has at the mother's, you know, in the mother's arms, that is the emuna that every adult is meant to develop in even times of crisis and danger. Like that, I'm like a baby nursing at the mother's arms. This is what Hashem was trying to bring them to. Had they eaten the man, they would have never sinned by the meraglim. All of this would have never happened. This was the beginning of the downfall. Now we go back to the Vayhi ben Soa. The man, that's the madrega of the Aron, whose badim, whose pole stuck out of the parochas in the Holy of Holies like two breasts. The man, the Aron, that was one level of existence. But they replaced it with another level. They ate meat. Things went different in a different direction. Their path to Eretz Yisrael was delayed. Okay, there was a it didn't go as smoothly. They lost the first base of Mikdash. We lost the second base of Mikdash. We will get to the end, but not this way, but through Nora. Now we end with the final idea of the Samachs in Ashrei, the Somech Hashem L'chol Hanoflim. We spoke about this Purim time. Make no mistake about it. The Sefer will be written. We do not see Jewish history as a long path from a beginning to an end on like a long line on a flat plane. That is not how we look at Jewish history. We look at Jewish history like a samach. In other words, all roads, the quicker road, the smoother road, the longer road, the more complicated road, the more tortuous road, okay, all roads will lead to the same destination. Imagine the surface of the globe. It's round. You start at point A. Okay? No matter how far you think you're traveling away from your goal, if you just keep going, you will get to your goal. The Jewish people will get to that last pasuk, Ubenocho. The Aron will rest. Shechina will dwell amongst us. We will arrive at our destination. We won't get there quickly and immediately with the Aron straight, with a few steps. But we will get there. There is no way, and our worst enemies will never succeed in distracting us or ultimately taking us off track. The secret we said in Purim was v'nahapochu. Turn it around and turn it around and you'll see, you get back, you can't escape, you get back to where you have to go. In Perkei Avos we say hafochvo, v'hafochvo, turn it and turn it, because everything is in it in the end. In other words, our worst enemies, who proved the rule of Nora, that how could we survive if not for Nora? Was it not Haman himself who tried to destroy the Jewish people? Who in the end, he put Esther into the royal palace. She gave birth, either biologically or ideologically, to Daryavish. And Daryavish let the Jews go back to Israel. Who did that? Haman did that. He thought he was ripping us away from our goal. He was just bringing us closer to it. He's going around the huge sphere. Look at Hitler, Yimach Shemo. He wanted to destroy all the Jewish people. You can argue he built Israel. He built the Jewish army. He built all the yeshivas over there. Would we have run like that without him? No, look, we're not running now. Right? So you can argue that the more they try to take us away, they are bringing us closer. They have no choice. They are compelled. All roads lead to the final destination. There's no way to not get there. But the question is, unfortunately, we didn't go by Hibin Sarah Aron. The Chazal say, do not make any mistake about it. Aron will be played out as Nora. And in retrospect, we will see that is Hashem's presence among us that is the cause of the Jewish survival through the ages, and that will ultimately be the body of this Sefer that will be written. The most important thing to remember, the nation will survive. The nation will get to its destination. It's the individuals in the nation that choose whether they will be part of that Sefer that will be written or they will not be part of it. That's our free choice. But the nation itself will come finally to the last Pasuk, which ultimately will be the first Pasuk, Bereishis Bara Elokim. Everything will be seen clearly. Everything will be understood. And then, like in new, real, regular adult life, you know what psychologists say? After we break away from our parents and we want their independence and we go down the track of independence, what do we want in the end? We really just want to come back to the womb, right? Back to that place of security. In the end, we come there, but now willingly, with appreciation, not with resistance. If after the whole story of Jewish history and everything we've gone through, we're happy to have worked our way backwards now, back to our mother, back to our source, back to a state of emunah, of trust and confidence in HaKadosh Baruch Hu's closeness to us. Okay, now, chew on that for a while.